and welcome to a new episode of High Road to Growth. When Nita and I started this podcast, it was pretty clear to us that we would have to do an episode on meditation. Of course, it is such an important topic when it comes to mental health, and it certainly became even more indispensable during the pandemic. So you can imagine that we are pretty excited about today's guest, Frank Bach, the lead product designer of Headspace, our most favorite meditation app and probably also the most prominent one on the market. Headspace's mission statement is to increase the world's mental health and overall happiness simply by making the world meditate. Their approach is that science always comes first, which is why the app is free of any spiritual or religious influences whatsoever in order to include as many people as possible. This is why Frank and Headspace are the perfect partners for us to talk about meditation from a purely scientific standpoint. Headspace uses 10 to 12 minute long meditation sessions that you can dive into at any time of the day. It's such an easy concept and specifically designed to incorporate meditation to your daily lifestyle, no matter how busy you are. We have asked Frank about the specifics of the product and how and why it works so well. And of course, since at the end of the day, Headspace is an LA-based tech and wellness company, we were totally curious to learn more about the working culture of the company that has the goal to make the world a happier place. So without further ado, let's head over to our conversation with Frank. Hi, and welcome to today's guest, Frank Bach. Frank, you're the lead product designer at Headspace, our favorite meditation app, and we are really excited to have you here. Just to give a short introduction, you've, besides being the lead product designer at Headspace, which is a huge thing in my perspective, you are a regular speaker, and you held, for example, a talk at the headquarters of TikTok in LA about mindfulness. Before that, you've been a senior visual and interaction designer at Eden Speakerman, a design consultancy firm. And before that, you even founded your own design agency, which is also very impressive. And I think what is the most important question for us to start with, what is Headspace from your perspective? From our perspective, it's like the most popular meditation app in the market. And if you look at the website, you have a very prominent and convincing mission statement, which says, to improve the health and happiness of the world. And we would like to ask you as a first question, why is Headspace so great? And what are the popular features of that? What would convince our listeners to use it?
Yeah, for sure. I think Headspace, you know, about 12 years ago started as a meditation app. You know, it was a very much a linear path to teach you how to meditate. So you kind of day one, day two, day three, you show up every day for about 10 minutes and learn how to meditate. And, you know, since we're in the tech space, we're in the startup kind of world. And, the way that we work on the app is constantly iterating and trying new things and trying to adapt with the way the world is changing and evolving, because as you know, in any kind of business, if you're stagnant, your competitors will then, start to pull your kind of your audience towards them. And so we're always trying to stay one step ahead. I think a couple of the features that have gone over very, very well are the sleep content, like the tab that we have to help you sleep. I think we've seen a totally new user base that comes to Headspace for sleep. But we're always trying to, no matter why people discover Headspace, we're always trying to bring them back to embedding mindfulness and meditation into their life. And so maybe today you just need help falling asleep, but hopefully that's a cue for building kind of healthier habits and decisions in your life. And so I think there's been a few themes over the years that I've been at Headspace. I've been there for 5.5 years, and what started as a meditation app became sort of a beyond meditation app, and then a sometimes referred to as a habit building app. And now in 2022, like coming out of or still in the pandemic, I think we're really seeing that the call to action for Headspace is to become a more robust mental health application. And so maybe building in things like coaching and therapy. But of course, as a designer, that's kind of where I come in, where we have these unique business challenges and goals that some of our members may have. And so how do you design a product that is able to do all of these things while still maintaining that simplicity, not losing your current member base, that kind of thing. So I think Headspace is great because we're constantly evolving with what the world needs. And that's why, you know, the mission statement that you mentioned, health and happiness of the world, I think that really comes through. And, you know, if we just stayed the same and never adapted, then we would be not trying to meet such an ambitious goal.
That sounds really interesting. And maybe to circle back why we're talking with you today about meditation and mindfulness and how we get to know each other and why we contacted you is for our listeners that we saw a post on LinkedIn. I think it was in spring this year. Or was it last year? I don't know. Since the pandemic, I'm getting confused. No, it wasn't last year. And you posted a picture of your cute little baby daughter, and you wrote under it, "It's easy to forget that beyond the work, we're just all people." And it was seen that you were just in a team call, like video call with your coworkers, and you showed your baby daughter, and like everybody liked your post and reshared it because it showed that we're just people and we are authentic. And like, and that is also the reason why Susan and I started the podcast, to spread the message that we are all one unique, holistic person with just one very diverse identity, and not putting on one hat that is work-related and one that is your private life, but like to mix it up and to show your values to the world, that you're as like with your characters and your flaws and your positive and negative attitudes, you are who you are. And so that's how we contacted you and asked you if you are interested in being a guest in our podcast, because we really would like to talk about Headspace and meditation. And so our question would be to like get a round view of who you are. How did you start at Headspace as a product designer, and what a product designer does, especially at Headspace?
For sure, yeah. And you know, the network you expect the least to go viral on is LinkedIn, I think, and that is how we became connected. And yes, that post started a broader discussion around how people show up in the workplace and kind of the challenges, especially for women and mothers who are often trying to hide those parts of their lives in the professional world. So yeah, that was an interesting couple of days. I think I was recovering from LinkedIn connections for months after that. Thank you. So to the question of what does a product designer do? Product designers balance two things mostly, which are the business goals and also the user or the people goals, or like the people problems. So what is the benefit to the person using your application or service, and how does that tie into the business strategy at the time, or influence strategy? And so some of the ways we work, again, you mentioned earlier, I had my own agency, which was very much a client services creative agency, doing a lot of marketing and things like that, where you have this like this client and designer relationship where I get to know my client, I get to learn about them. Whereas when you're working in-house in a tech company, you don't necessarily have that relationship because, for example, an app like Headspace has 2 million paying members, and we can't possibly know each and every one of them. And we're designing at such a scale that you're maybe not going to be able to be everything for everybody, you know? So you kind of have to keep that in mind while working. And so what we do is we have regular interviews with our members, and we ask them questions. We learn about them, learn about their challenges, learn about their successes, the problems they face every day, and try to design solutions in our app around that. And so you could see that pretty clearly. For example, when there was larger, like, would you say during the pandemic, there were a lot of people facing issues around financial stability. And so we created courses and things around that. When you saw the big uprising with groups like Black Lives Matter and others, we also spoke with groups who were experts in those spaces to be able to help us create and share content around that. So really being topical with what is happening in the world and the problems people are facing in the moment. And you don't really get to that point without being in tune with what the people using your product are needing. So if you go too far into the what is good for the business, then you lose what is good for the member. And the other way around, you know, in an ideal world, you know, the Headspace app could be free for everybody forever, but then we would no longer have a business. it's a careful balance. And, you know, of course I'm one of a few designers on the team. So we work a lot with engineers, product managers, copywriters, and I like to think of us as the glue of the team. Like, it's kind of our job to connect all of those dots and make sure that, you know, in the end, the user has a good experience with the app and is able to achieve what they sought to do. You know, if you went to Headspace because you wanted to fall asleep or you wanted to be less stressed, hopefully we've designed something that helps you feel that. Otherwise, we'd be failing at our job.
I actually use Headspace for sometimes for falling asleep. And when you mentioned, Jeff, these sleep casts, I can't remember any story on them because I actually do fall asleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I never make it to the end.
Yeah. But I know there's one in a hair where, like, ladies are at a hairdresser and getting styled. Yeah. It's raining. Yeah, that's all I can remember.
I know the one. I know the one.
So thanks for that.
No problem. Yeah, it's been, again, we're a unique company in the way that sort of going into the mental health space, but, you know, being based in LA, we also have a larger media component to the company. And so there's, like you said, all of these sleep casts, which are all produced in-house. We also have daily inspirational videos. So there's a team that creates these almost like mini episodes called The Wake Up, which is a daily kind of story. And then on the side of that, there's also a podcast network that has been being built over the years. So I believe there's the main kind of Headspace podcast, and then there's a handful of other ones with different hosts. And so for me personally, it's been such an interesting experience to see kind of how a company can start with this like core offering and then start to build around that. You know, of course, becomes a bigger question of like focus and, you know, trying to kind of do everything and having the team to support that. But it has been a really awesome learning experience just to kind of see how it's done, you know, from nothing to something.
Yeah, also saw just
that we can go a little bit more broadly with that. But usually the US is like our test market, US or Canada. And so that's pretty recent. And yeah, there's been people who have been working on that, who have built up the business case to allow it to make sense that we do such a thing. And I'm really proud of that effort. I think that's, you know, that's a great move. And we also know, like, you know, we have insights on who our audience is, and also insights on where we want that audience to grow. And we want to be an app for everybody at all ages. And so for sure, meeting teens in that need state, I think is going to be super important for us to, you know, continue to stay relevant as a service. You know,
that's really great. And I think that brings me to my first question about meditation itself, because what struck me on your website is that you offer help or provide tools through science-backed meditation and mindfulness tools. And I think that's the thing. If we talk to colleagues, for example, they're always a bit skeptical about meditation because it's some sort of esoteric witchcraft for them. But I think that's not at all true. Right. And we dug a little bit into research from Harvard, for example, which says that our minds wanders about 47% of the time, mm-hmm. and that we have over 70,000 thoughts per day. And that meditation actually helps us on a physical level and psychological level and also a cognitive level to deal with that and to get actual benefits from it, even if you just meditate for 10 minutes a day, as, for example, your app
right.
offers. So I would love to start a dialogue with you, or to open a dialogue to discuss the actual benefits, to show to our listeners that it's not just some lifestyle thing, but that it's actually helpful, especially in times like COVID and the lockdowns that maybe mm-hmm. some of the countries are currently facing.
Yeah, and we know through science that meditation, having a regular practice, does reduce stress and anxiety. And we have the studies to be able to say this and, you know, and put it on a piece of marketing and say, for sure, with consistent practice, that will help you. It's always this question of, like, going into a meditation practice with a goal. Some people do and some people don't. I think maybe your more classic sort of meditation lifestyle people kind of go into it, you know, without a goal. But definitely there's a lot of people who use the app or try to learn to meditate with, you know, either that goal of wanting to be more creative, tapping into their productivity, maybe dealing with anxiety, like you mentioned, through COVID. Definitely was a large segment of people who were coming to the app to help with that. Sometimes it's just to get a little bit of clarity. Maybe you're I know for myself, when making some major life decisions, like moving to a new city or, you know, changing career path, those kinds of things, definitely having some kind of meditation and wellness routine has helped a lot. But yeah, there's a whole page on the Headspace website around all of the kind of science, like the top science claims. And like you said, there's even in at Harvard, there's a lot of research that they've done. There's also, I believe, some research out of Oxford. And even here in Los Angeles, there's a whole meditation, what'd you say, meditation kind of meets science course at UCLA University. And so, you know, there's a lot of, it's very topical right now. There's a lot of groups looking into this. And, you know, you hear sometimes people being skeptical of meditation as if it's kind of some passing fad, but it's in fact like thousands of years old. You know, it's something people maybe have only been finding out about recently, but the history goes back way, 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 way back. It's just that it has had these moments in culture where it sort of reappears for 5 to 10 years and maybe in niche groups. But I think we're really in a major, like, mainstream moment where it's something people are comfortable talking about often.
It's so interesting how sometimes things like meditation, which is like a really old feature from cultures, mm-hmm. like 100,000 years old, and people used to do it and felt the benefits. And nowadays mm-hmm. the science kind of comes and follows it and explains mm-hmm. to our society now the benefits. And I can speak from experience that I feel how meditating regularly helps me, especially in times where my mind can't focus and wanders around a lot, mm-hmm. To just take a moment and breathe and be aware that I'm stressed right now. That is kind mm-hmm. of the first lesson I learned from meditating, to be more focused on my feelings, and then to learn with just taking a step back and pausing for a moment to also handle stressful situations. For example, mm-hmm. when there are like many tasks and I don't know which one to work on first because all are pressing and mm-hmm. urgent. So it's a mindset that you can learn while meditating somehow. I feel that things in life, either if it's work-related or private, don't happen to you for a bad reason, but it's how you internally perceive them and how you decide if they affect you, your mood, your stress level, etc. So can you maybe tell us a little bit how or why meditation helps to build such a resilience?
I think you kind of got to it in what you said, which is it helps you note emotions and feelings and put a little bit of space between you and your reaction. So if you're feeling angry, then, you know, hopefully over time you've built this response where your mind goes, oh, I'm angry, or that's anger. And then I get to choose how I engage with that feeling of anger or that feeling of jealousy or that feeling of stress. Obviously, like to a certain extent, you know, if you're dealing with something that's more like a chronic mental illness, that, you know, it's going to be difficult to meditate your way out of that. But for sort of your regular day-to-day stresses and, you know, maybe conversations with family members or arguments with your partner, that kind of stuff, it can really help smooth over that situation. Like you said, just based on how you react and how much power you give that scenario. And you can, in fact, deflate that pretty quickly just by allowing a little bit of room for the feeling to settle and make a decision on, you know, what your next step is going to be. You know, how do I want to engage with this? And kind of puts you in the driver's seat again, where you're not allowing life to just happen to you, and you're an active participant in your day to day. And I think that's empowering. And, you know, for sure, it's hard to be perfect at this, and it's probably unrealistic to expect yourself to be. And I always tell people, you know, I work at Headspace, and even for me, like, a meditation practice is hard to maintain. And even sometimes it's hard to find the time. And, you know, I think even when I say that to people, I see them like, I'm seeing you nod along. It's like, yeah, it's like, it's hard. It sometimes doesn't come as naturally, and it can be as difficult as a exercise routine. You know, it's just easy. It's easy to say, ah, not today, I'll just do it tomorrow.
Totally. Yeah. But I feel it's so important to connect with yourself, and by that connecting to yourself, you also are able to connect with the other person you're dealing with or talking to. And just while you were talking, I was wondering, do you also offer, or what would you say, like, for little kids, as soon as they're old enough to understand what meditation is, or maybe a sense of playful introduction to it? I think that would be something which would be very valuable for little kids to learn in a young age, and to by then implement it in their life, like a daily habit, like brushing your tooth and meditating for a few minutes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of content in the app for kids and families, and some of it is, you know, for, you know, 3 years and up, or different age ranges. And now I think the kind of funny challenge is that nobody is more present than a child, right? They're not worried about the past, the future. They're just kind of there. And in that way, it makes it hard for them to actually pause. So I think the like Headspace approach to that has been more of a, more of playfulness, more focusing on your full body, not so much on the mind, but on, you know, being focused on your breath. Maybe like, if you have a small child, maybe, you know, getting them to put their hands on their stomach and just feel their breathing, or maybe implementing something like a body scan, like getting them to like wiggle their toes or something, or stretch their arms. So it's a little bit more physical, I think, than mental at that age. Where am I headed with this? There's some stuff in the app for this in different age ranges. It can be definitely a challenge with kids, because they are kind of go, go, go until they crash, and then they, it's hard to find that opportunity to have that mindful moment with them. But I guess as if you're a parent, you can lead by example and mm-hmm. let them know that, you know, they can have their me time. And maybe as a more holistic approach, helping them identify the like feelings and emotions as they're going through them. And again, in kind of your reaction to their feeling, you can create, I think, a much more comfortable environment for kids where it doesn't have to feel so stressful. And just on the topic of kind of meditation and habit building and that, something I wanted to add was after a while with consistent practice, you can start to identify moments in your day where it's maybe not an eyes closed meditation for 10 minutes, but it's maybe like that pause between, like, especially now working from home for a lot of us, that moment in your kitchen before you go to your desk to start your day. You know, maybe that's where you have a pause. Maybe you just kind of take a second to plant your feet firmly on the ground and kind of connect with your body again. And maybe you're brewing some coffee or some tea and you can take a second to just like breathe and, you know, have a little moment of appreciation for the day. And that doesn't need to take longer than 10 seconds. But you know, you can start to find those little micro moments throughout the day that are just like, I guess more around mindful living than meditation mm-hmm. practice per se. But I've found that helpful, especially having a 14-month-old baby running around, mm-hmm. a toddler. She's getting into toddler ages. Yeah.
I think the most prominent example for me is brushing my teeth, because sometimes I catch myself brushing my teeth, running around the apartment, making a coffee, yeah. answering to emails, answering WhatsApps, and not really, because you have an electronic toothbrush, you don't really mm-hmm. take care of what's happening there. So it's really right. doing like 3-4 things at a time. And I think 5 or 10 years ago, we were really proud when we say, especially women, we are really good at multitasking, but mm-hmm. the truth is it only stresses you out, right? And I think there are a couple of misunderstandings at this around meditation, like that right. you are not able to, or you don't want to, or you don't see the purpose of just being still and keeping your mind still. And I think mm-hmm. I heard lots of people saying that meditation is not for them because they mm-hmm. have this monkey mind wandering around and they can't just mm-hmm. sit still. But you have to train it, right? Because when you start, when you're stressed, I don't right. know, like every second or third date, I have a hard time with meditating. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that I'm doing this for a couple of years doesn't mean it works perfectly. It's always hard, mm-hmm. as you said. And I think persistence is key, and you have to find your style of meditation, as you just mm-hmm. said. And I don't know, how are you meditating? Are you just using the app, or are you also have other meditation forms like breathwork or gratitude training or donut journaling or something like that? Can you right. recommend something? And do you stick to the 10 minutes or do you decrease, increase, yeah. depending on
I
the
usually
day?
I usually do 10 minutes. If you go on the Headspace app, the today's meditation is usually my go-to. I don't have any courses or anything that I'm actively working on right now. So I really like that kind of little bit of wisdom at the start of the session, which changes every day. And then just a like breathing exercise, body scan, that kind of thing. Usually sitting, not usually laying down, but some other tools I've enjoyed have been even just like using Spotify. Like yesterday I was working out and I was listening to, you know, like workout music, like stuff to get you going. And I was like, you know what, this is a little too much right now. I'm just going to listen to some meditation bells. And so I said, you know, I had my Apple Watch. I'm like, hey Siri, play meditation bells on Spotify. And I wasn't sure what would come up, but I really enjoyed it. And it was a nice contrast to like the pace of the workout, just to have something to, you know, bring the energy down in a way. So I do really like just the bells and silence. If that's maybe more just to like set a mood or a tone for an environment rather than like a focused practice. What else? I've been playing with some fitness apps that have yoga and stretching routines, and I am enjoying those, though, you know, for sure not as often as I'd like to be doing them, like many things. But yeah, typically just the like Headspace is the tool I use to learn about meditation. And so of course working there, I have a lot of kind of loyalty to the product in that way. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there on the market. And if a subscription is not for you right now, I think there's websites like YouTube and Spotify that can help you discover a few free tools just to get started and see if there's anything that you like.
It's interesting. In the morning, I really love to use the Mindspace app. And in the evening, when I try to get to sleep, I'm always using some breathwork techniques like the 4-7-8 breathing, where you breathe in for 4 seconds and you hold for 7 and you breathe
like
out for 8.
Like a box breathing kind of
thing.
Like
a box breathing technique. And I think that calms me down the most. But I know, Nina, with you, it's the opposite, right? You don't really work with breathwork. So it's really interesting how everyone has his own technique, right?
Yeah, totally. I try, how to say it, like not actively influence my breath while meditating, but to just focus on my natural breath. But it's really hard because I feel like every time I start focusing on my breath, I influence it. And then I tend to, what you just said, Susan, to fall into a breathing technique. And when I realize, I try to let it go again. And what helps me is to put like my hand on my belly and to feel like the bodily sensation, how my belly moves when I inhale and exhale. And then it helps me to release how to influence my breath and just see how it naturally flows. And I realized sometimes when I'm really stressed and many things are in my mind, it's hard for me to fall asleep. And then I try that technique as well. And sometimes it helps, but not really. And I realized for me, and I mentioned it earlier, that the sleep casts help me because my mind can focus on something kind of creative a little bit, because I start imagining the story. It's like, it reminds me to when you're a little child and your parents read a story to you and then you listen to it and fall asleep.
Yep.
And maybe that's the adult style of a good night sleep story. I don't know, but it really helps. And so it's hard for the mind to get into a stillness and for the body and muscles to release. And I have the feeling that that is important to fall asleep. What would you say, how does meditation help to get a better sleep quality and maybe get a better, not only sleep quality, but also to fall asleep and then have a better quality and sleep through the night?
Right. Yeah, I think it comes back to awareness and, you know, the awareness of you're having trouble falling asleep and why, maybe. For some people, it's going to be racing thoughts. For some people, maybe it's that you had a cup of coffee today at 3 o'clock and you shouldn't have. You know, there's just so many factors. Maybe you're focusing on something that happened 5 years ago that you can't get out of your head, you know, that kind of thing. And just having that space, that awareness of, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's just my mind like kind of bouncing an idea around. And maybe if I shift my focus to something like breathing, I can have a better chance to fall asleep. I can't speak totally to like the science of the quality of sleep, but you know, for sure there's stuff on the Headspace website. And if you go deeper into the sleep page, there's going to be a lot more information around that. But science first has been the approach on pretty much everything that we do. And I think it's a differentiator to other products out there. You know, when it comes to sleep, like if you want to live more mindfully, maybe start a meditation habit. If you're not sleeping, that's like the first key to, I think, just like general good health. You know, if you're able to get a good night's rest, then you have a better chance the next day. So it's all just like this kind of habitual loop of slept well, was able to wake up on time, made enough space for the things I need to do today, not feeling rushed, not feeling so stressed. I mean, for sure you're going to have those human moments, but yeah, that was one of the kind of unlocks at one point and why we decided to go and do things based around sleep, because we were formerly trying to get people to build a meditation habit by anchoring it to something like brushing your teeth. And then we just kind of kept going back further and sort of like, okay, what about first thing in the morning? And then what about first thing before bed? And we were seeing that engagement in our product where people were using the app mostly at two times during the day. So you had like your kind of your evening routine and your morning routine, and also getting a little bit of customer feedback around, hey, I really like the app and I'm interested in learning how to meditate, but I keep falling asleep. And we're like, oh, wow, I wonder if there's an opportunity there to even help people more with that falling asleep kind of issue. But yeah, I think it's kind of happened very organically. And again, thankfully, being in touch with our members often has helped us kind of navigate that. And you know, we're not the only sleep tool out there, but I think we've been able to give it our own very like Headspace flavor. So like you said, with the sleep casts, they have stories that are interesting, but not quite interesting enough to really pull you in. They're just kind of enough. And we sneak into those stories things like breathing exercises. So you're maybe listening about a story about a bunch of cats who live at a marina. And you're like, okay, that's a fun story. I can kind of imagine these cats. Okay. And then all of a sudden you're focusing on the waves and you're breathing with the waves and you're, oh, wow. And then hopefully soon you're asleep.
So that's the trick. Good to know.
Yeah, I mean, we worked with our science team. When we developed the sleep casts, we also hired a group of poets to help us write these stories, and ends up there's a large group of poets who have a lot of content to share and a lot of great ideas. And so working with our media and content teams, we were able to piece all of that together so that it was, you know, a good story, a bunch of stories that are good enough, not too good. We're not trying to create Netflix or a podcast where you really get pulled in, but also connected to science so that there's some kind of method to it. It's not simply a story. It's got some techniques built into it as well.
That's really interesting, because we were actually wondering how you're building up your product. So for example, you said you had or got a research team on board. So why did you choose to produce 7-minute meditation pieces? Why did you choose the coloring? You have a very specific coloring, I noticed, right, in the app. Which voices do you pick? Which stories and which themes? For example, you have the theme for, or a class for being anxious, then you have a class for being angry all the time, or a class for helping you to focus more. How did you develop those products actually?
Well, on the content side, thankfully, we're able to see in our data and in our dashboards, we can see what is the most popular content. And when we can see that there's a lot of energy around a certain kind of content and maybe a certain theme, then we usually will continue to build upon that. And so if we're seeing that, for example, there's a sleep cast called Rain Day Antiques, and it has performed very, very well. It's one that people use quite a bit. And so we see enough action around Rain Day Antiques to say, let's develop a part two, a part three. Let's put in the effort to create Rain Day Antiques in different languages. And so using that information to, I guess, like de-risk the business decision in a way. And that's kind of the iterative product development way of operating. And when it comes to, so you mentioned something, there was something else you mentioned. I can't, it's slipping.
Like the coloring, for example.
Oh, coloring, yes, on the brand side. Yeah, it was a decision that was kind of made accidentally many, many years ago, where when Headspace was launching, the people who were designing it were very skilled in like brand and marketing design. Like they were not so much on the user experience design kind of specialization. And I think they looked at what was out on the market and they didn't want to make something that was cliche or that looked kind of like everything else. They wanted to make something that really stood out. And it was just received really, really well. And if you look at the artwork, it's for sure playful and bright. And now we do have a dark mode in our app so that you're able to use the product at night without losing your vision. Yeah. But the bright colors and the approach and the smiley faces, I think, is a big differentiator for us and is a way that we stand out in kind of in the noise and clutter of the marketing world, and products as well. And again, kind of, you know, goes back to our founder, Andy, who is the original voice in the product. His approach was for sure, like from a Buddhist perspective, but did not want to embed any kind of like spiritual or religious views into the app. And I think that's also helped. That's also helped guide like the content approach, the science-backed aspect, the visual approach. I mean, I wish I could say it was all perfectly planned, but I think sometimes you stumble your way into success and you need to know when is time to continue down that path or when to switch gears. But yeah, I would say today it's a pretty refined brand with a strong visual aesthetic that people can recognize from a distance, you know?
And that's, I think, a very important aspect that you not just, or that the founder was not just a Buddhist or a monk that came along and said, I want to spread my message to the world, whatever I believe, but there is actual science behind this. Because I've read recently about a meditation retreat because I was looking for one, to be frank. And the woman said that they had to get up at 4 a.m. and they got like an apple and an egg and maybe a banana a day to eat. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't allowed to talk for 2 weeks. And they had one Q&A session and she was asking, or she was saying, I think I would be more successful at meditation, especially when we are meditating 4 hours a day, if I would have eaten something or at least got enough sleep. And they were saying like, no, meditation is all about detaching from your bodily feelings like hunger or sleepiness, for example. And I was like, but that's exactly not the science-backed approach where you're saying you need to like your 7 hours sleep a day as a regular person. And if you deprive yourself of sleep, as you said earlier, it's like a cycle of health. Why would it help to be better in meditation? Why would meditation help you to be healthier when you're not allowed to sleep? So it didn't make sense at all. And I think if people were not used to meditate or not used to the idea of meditation, hear this, then I can understand why they become skeptical.
Right. Yeah. I would respond to that and say, like, for me, that's the idea of like detaching from sleep or from hunger or whatnot. Like, that's an interesting exercise maybe like to try, like maybe I would try that once. But for sure, I'm not a meditation expert or a scientist by any means. Simply a designer who works on the product. But yeah, that doesn't really speak to me very much. Though I want to go back to your question. I remembered what I was thinking around. How do we decide on which teachers to have in the app? And so for many years, the only voice in the app was Andy, who was our co-founder. And that's how we started. And eventually, you know, through that customer feedback, we got to hear that, you know, a lot of people really like his voice, but some people don't. And some people would like a female voice. Some people would like a voice that is more attuned to their culture. And so again, it's like listening to your users and responding to that in a way that makes sense for you and for them. And that's led us to have, I believe there's probably like 5 or 6 voices across the app right now. And now if you go to some of the courses and sessions that we have, you'll be able to choose if you want. There's Andy, Eve, who is a female British voice. There's Kisanga, who's a black man from New York. There's Dora, who is a African Canadian woman from Vancouver. And then we're also working with some groups in the kind of, what would you say, like in the Asian community to bring that culture to life in the product. And, you know, for sure that was also a, what would you say, like a learning that we gained over the last couple of years, that many people were not feeling like they were seen in our app. And for sure we wanted to address that. And so we put a team to task on it and figured out a way to bring more of that, more of those perspectives into the app. You know, I think in 2021, diversity was a huge topic all around the world. And you know, thankfully as a company, it's something that we try to address at the kind of the root cause, which is in the actual recruitment and hiring of team members. And since we've gone to a more remote work environment, rather than only based in Los Angeles, I've seen a huge change in the kinds of people who come to Headspace, who work at Headspace. And it's been so nice just to have these new perspectives, these new ways of seeing things, new lived experiences. I always joke that when I joined Headspace 5.5 years ago, it was sort of like the cool kids of Los Angeles. You know, it was sort of like everybody had kind of the same vibe. Most people, you know, between like 25 and 35 years of age. And we're just seeing, now that we've grown and gone remote first, you know, like living in a major city, major urban city is not for everyone. And if you want to go back to the mission of health and happiness of the world, you got to bring the world in to the product to be able to meet people where they're at. So that for me, that was a huge, huge win for us for over the last couple of years, is to identify that and actually provide a solution to it.
It's so interesting when you're talking about Headspace and your approach on your product and your development. I think it's a great example for showing that data and analytics are an important tool to connect with the human being using the product. We are wondering, how is the work culture at Headspace itself? How is it to work there? Do you have special meditation practices or groups where you all jointly meditate?
Yeah, for sure. I think we need to, if we're going to make the best product for this, we need to live it, you know, we need to walk the walk. And, you know, having daily group meditations, those are of course optional. We have those every day for 10 minutes. There's also a 30-minute mindful break every day that, you know, as we are global, that's a, you know, it's a different time of day for different people. But for sure, there's a recurring calendar item set by HR that gives you a 30-minute break every day. And my personal favorite is through the pandemic, we were seeing that a lot of people were not taking time off. You know, there was nowhere to go. And I think people in not just at Headspace, but in general, were feeling, if you were still working, feeling lucky to still have a job. And so people were very focused in that. And the reaction from our human resources team was one, to survey the company and to get some information. And the response was to give us a no meeting day every Friday, which was really nice. And every second Friday, like the alternate Friday, is a day off. So we work 4 days, 5 days, 4 days, 5 days. And so that has been a huge relief, and I think a very progressive approach. You know, there are other companies who do similar things, but that's been, I think, one of the most appreciated kind of perks of the company. Something we do quite a bit, and maybe we used to do it more when we were in the office, but was to bring in speakers who have like specializations around certain topics. Like sometimes it would be an athlete who would kind of share their meditation journey. Sometimes people in the tech world, like we had the founder of LinkedIn come and speak to us. We've had Bill and Melinda Gates come to speak to us. Trying to think. I mean, of course, being in Los Angeles helped for that because people are usually spending a lot of time there that are like in the media and kind of business world. But yeah, that's been one perk that I really enjoy. It doesn't always have to be these high profile people either. Like sometimes just having someone who's a nutritionist come and speak to the team around like just healthy eating, like just to have the opportunity to tune into that during the workday and not have it be this like outside of work thing that I'm scheduling for, that I really appreciate.
Before getting to the second to last question, I would like to ask you if you currently accept job offers.
Yeah, for sure. There's a jobs page. There's a jobs page on the
sounds
site.
Great. That sounds great. I'm really curious when you have each second Friday off, did you notice a decrease in efficiency of your people or in the sales or something like that? Was there any negative impact or was it more positive actually?
I mean, this is not the official HR answer, and I can't officially probably make that statement, but from my point of view, I have not seen the teams that I'm on operating at a lesser capacity. I think it's just forced people to prioritize more. Like, you know, could this meeting be an email kind of thing? Like, do we need to regroup? Do we need a stand up every single day? Or could we have, could we use Slack every day and maybe meet over Zoom once per week just to have a check-in? So just being more efficient, I think that was kind of the challenge that people faced, I believe. But, yeah, no slowdown or anything like that. No, I would say even, maybe even more speediness, just because you're maybe more focused during those 4 days. And on my side, where I'm typically balancing between like managing projects and mentorship with my team and things, and also being a active designer on certain features and offerings, having that no meeting day on the second Friday is really key to like actually getting things done sometimes, where you can, you know, your Monday is kind of like setting up the week, you know, Tuesday, you maybe get like a few things done. And then by Thursday, the list of things to do can easily be stacking up. And just to know I have that Friday that is fully open, nobody's going to bother me, no one expects to talk to me that day, I can really like, you know, have my headphones on, focused, and get a bunch of stuff done. So that I've really enjoyed that.
It sounds, sounds sensible. I mean, you can't run on high speed for 5 or 7 days a week. It just doesn't work. So it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And before I hand over to Nina for our last question, we were really curious if you noticed an increase of sales in the last year. And if so, do you think it was just due to COVID and lockdown, or do you think it's just the right time at the moment for your product?
Yeah, I think it's both those things. I think like, you know, product development and the world of like growth marketing, you're definitely trying to set yourself up to react to a scenario in a way that meets people's needs in that moment. And so the pandemic and us feeling like we needed to have a response to that, or like people coming to us and saying like, what's Headspace going to do about this kind of thing? That was, you know, an interesting moment that I don't know I've felt before. But the biggest business growth piece has been in the Headspace for Work, like B2B space, where employers were looking for solutions for their employees. usually as like an add-on to like their healthcare packages. And so that was like, that was a big surprise. And as far as on the consumer side, I think things have been going just like normally well. But the B2B side for sure was like, oh wow, there's something going on here, and we need to pay attention to it. Whereas in the past, it was maybe just kind of this nice to have on the side kind of offering, where the most of the focus was on the consumer app.
Yeah, I really appreciate that shift in the mindset of employers to implement mindfulness more into the work culture. Mm-hmm. And probably Headspace is a great example to be a really unique and open-minded company and to implement that culture that you are selling with your product also within mm-hmm. Headspace as a company and as an employer. And from what you are talking, I'm not only a fan from your products, but also from Headspace itself, because it's such a cool company. And it's so, it seems like you all have a really creative energy, and that also employees are seen mm-hmm. as a really sustainable asset and treated like that. So that is really valuable. And I really like that I learned that today from you and about Headspace. So that is really great. And thank you so much for your time. But before we conclude this podcast, we all always have one question, one final one, which would be, if you have like one final advice for our listeners, like what advice would you give them as a takeaway?
Sure. One bit of advice. If you haven't drank a cup of water today, go and do that.
That's a great one.
Stay hydrated.
That's really important. So Frank, thank you so much for your time and being a guest in our podcast. We really appreciate that. And it also reminded me to pick up my meditation practice again, because I was really lazy a couple of weeks. So I feel like it's a good time to start again. So yeah, thanks for that.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's been nice to chat with you. Thank you.